Israel also kept a close eye on Iraq when the first and second Gulf Wars were raging. Presumably, Israel is still watching Iraq. There's been a surge in violent attacks there recently, with more than 2,000 people killed since April. But the focus on Iraq has slipped since U.S. troops withdrew at the end of 2011. Reuters correspondent Samia Nahul recently returned to Baghdad after a decade away. Nahul was born in Lebanon, but she was in Iraq in April of 2003 to cover the invasion. She was on the 15th floor of the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad when the U.S. invasion began. What happened to her there changed her life.
At dawn, the firing started, and I started seeing the tanks pushing onto the Jumhuriya bridge, advancing. I saw also Iraqi soldiers basically taking off their uniforms and running away, basically. And I was finally, I can see American troops, you know, they're pushing through the Jumhuriya, which is a strategic bridge. They are inside Baghdad. There's no resistance. We can't hear a lot of firing from the Iraqi side. And while I was reporting, I saw like an orange glow, and, you know, a colleague said, look, and then we looked, and that was the tank shell that hit our bureau.
And what happened next?
All I can remember is that my face was burning. I couldn't see. I was in such a pain, and our colleagues were trying to pull us inside and to rescue us. And there was no electricity because they were calling, asking for the hotel to put on the generator. And while we were going to hospital, there was still bombardment. They took us to the first hospital, and, you know, they couldn't help us except clean our wounds. And I kept on telling my colleague, I can't see. I lost, you know, maybe I became blind. And the doctor was saying, just hold on, you know, maybe you would be able to see. There's a lot of blood in your head and your face. And they took us to a second hospital, and this is where I found out that my colleague Taras Protsyuk was killed, because I heard the doctor saying that he didn't make it. And, you know, that was very upsetting.
It turns out that an Iraqi surgeon removed shrapnel and bone fragments from your brain. I mean, he saved your life, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this is what, at the third hospital, they took me to this neurosurgical hospital where I said, I just need to have the operation here. I know I cannot make it outside Baghdad. I could see the bombardment, and, you know, there was no way I was going to be evacuated. So anyway, I had the surgery. They took me to the theater at midnight, and it was very tough, you know, being on your own in a city at war without...
Samia.
It's just tough.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
I'm sure going back to Baghdad has stirred up all these memories, and must be really hard to talk about it.
Yeah, anyway, I was blessed. I survived. But two colleagues, you know, Taras died, and a cameraman from Telecinco Spanish TV also died on the 14th floor. So I was blessed. I survived. But while going into the theater, I didn't know in what shape I'm going to wake up, whether I was going to be, you know, damaged for life. And it took me almost a year and a half to recover. But as I said, I was lucky.
I remember very clearly that U.S. shelling of the Palestine Hotel in those early hours of the war in 2003. Was there any explanation why a hotel filled with foreign journalists was attacked that night?
We had no idea until now. You know, there was a Reuters investigation. I'm sure other media outlets tried to find out. We moved to the Palestine Hotel just at midnight before the war started. And we were told that, you know, our editors and all the media outlets gave the coordinates that this is where all our, you know, journalists were staying, that we would be safe there. There was no military activity. Nobody fired from the hotel. We were just journalists, civilians covering the war.
Mm. It sounds like you have some very personal and painful memories, chapters in your life that you needed to try and close by going back to Iraq. But can you just tell us why you did want to go back this time? This was the first time since being medically evacuated back in 2003, right?
I'm still a journalist. I'm the editor for the region now, and I cover all these countries. So I wanted to go back. I wanted to see the place after 10 years.
What did you see? Tell us what has changed, or rather, what has not changed.
I was shocked to see that it's still a country at war. Arriving at the airport, it was like arriving in a military barrack. For miles, you see all these walls built next to the airport to stop suicide attacks or attackers. So I felt like, you know, I was in Syria in April. I felt safer in Syria, in Damascus, than I felt in Baghdad. One Sunni says that, you know, all his neighborhood now is Sunni, and all his neighbors who are Shiite left because, you know, they were threatened. They were brought up together. They love each other. And they were friends, you know. And he said, but I cannot go to his area because he's in a Shiite area. So the friend tells him, don't come because you'll be in danger. And, of course, he tells him, don't come to my Sunni area. You are in danger. So they communicate on Facebook.
You've also written about this at a personal level. You met an Iraqi man who named his son Omar, which is a classically Sunni name, a name that his father now regrets giving him. Can you tell us why?
When he was born years ago, there was no sectarian hatred as such. And now, you know, if somebody arrests him at the checkpoint, immediately they know he's a Sunni, so he's in danger of being killed. If you have a radical militant, Shiite militant, he would just say that, you know, Omar Abu Bakr, and then probably he'll be kidnapped or killed. So this is, you hear this, and the same applies, of course, you know, if you have Al-Qaeda in Mosul and they get somebody called Ali, they do the same.
Are ordinary Iraqis following what's happening in Syria, and are they seeing the Syrian conflict through a Sunni-Shia prism?
The Shiite-Sunni fault lines are there from Iraq to Damascus to Beirut. It has become like that, but particularly in Iraq, where I met many Shiite fighters, Iraqi Shiite fighters, they're going, volunteers and fighters, they go to Syria to defend the Shiite shrines and to take part in the, what they say, in the war against Shiites or Alawites and helping the Alawite brothers. It is the case now.
I really don't want to let you go, Samia, without asking you about your return to the Palestine Hotel where the tank shell ripped through the wall and your two colleagues died. What was that like for you?
The guy who was at the reception is the same guy who was working when I was living at the Palestine Hotel and working during that period, and he was very welcoming. And I said, I just want to see it. So he agreed to open the floor for me, and it was very, very, very tough going. I didn't last long there because I started feeling like I was, you know, I was gagging. I just felt like I was becoming numb. Maybe I was going to have the panic attack that gripped me for years after the attack. But, you know, I looked at the bridge from there, and I just imagined what happened that day, you know, how the Americans were getting in, how just within minutes, you know, the tank shell hit us and we all suffered for years. And I thought about Taras, who was the night before telling me that I can't wait, I want to go and see my son, I want to go back home. It was very tough, you know, it was very painful to relive it, but it's a chapter I needed to close.
Reuters correspondent Samia Nahul speaking with us from Beirut. Samia, thank you for reliving this visit to Baghdad with us. I know it's tough, but we really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks.